Welcome to another edition of the Why Pod, where we highlight everyday Wyoming leaders. This episode features a conversation with illustrator Zach Pullen. We talk about things like our responsibility to our supporters, how new projects can be like new jobs, and a fascinating comparison between law and art. Hope you enjoy listening to the conversation as much as we enjoyed recording it. Here we go with Zach Pullen.
My name's Zach Pullen. I'm a freelance illustrator turned muralist in a weird sort of way, living in Casper, Wyoming.
And you are someone who left Wyoming and then came back.
Yeah.
Where did you go when you left?
I left here to go to college in Columbus, Ohio. From Columbus, I moved back here and got married in Nancy English Park. And then a month after we got married, moved to New York. And lived upstate New York for like close to 8 years, I guess.
We were talking before we started recording about the differences between big city, small city, and you had some perspectives on what's different about living in a big city or a big population as opposed to living in Wyoming.
I love the culture of New York, for sure, but I like it in Wyoming too. The one thing that we have going for us here is that we don't have a rallying team or something like that. The population of Wyoming is great because you feel like you have a back pocket of cheerleaders as compared to living in a bigger city where you're a little bit more isolated or more metropolis area. You're way more isolated than people seem to think. It's harder to connect to a community in a big area like that. But then when you go back out into the world to a bigger area, it feels like you're taking Wyoming with you in a lot of ways.
And you shared a visual perspective about flying into Casper?
Yeah. A couple of days ago, flew back from Orlando via Denver into Casper, and looking out the window, I hadn't done it during the day in a long time, and it's so crazy how isolated we are. But, you know, you can live here and with everything that's going on, the world seems to have shrunken a little bit.
Because a little while ago, you mentioned the idea that you left to go to college,
mm-hmm.
to art college. You thought about interacting with your teachers, instructors, I'm not sure what you
okay,
call
yeah.
them, a little bit differently than I've ever heard people think about their teachers.
I think by growing up in Wyoming, you have this ability to succeed and talk to a lot of people. I think you're a little bit more extroverted. I think you need to be a little bit more extroverted. And so when I went to college, I took it upon myself to kind of save a little bit of money and take my instructors out for a beer or pick their brain about certain things. And I didn't necessarily connect with the students that I went to school with as much as I connected with my instructors. All of my students and all my peers were climbing the ladder at the exact same time as I was. Like, we were starting on the bottom rung and on our way up. And so it kind of goes to that top of your class in high school, whatever. And then you get to college and everybody, again, starts climbing the ladder from the bottom rung. I entered my college as a junior. And so I didn't have the first freshman and sophomore year of getting to know you. Type of thing with these people. So I came in as kind of an outsider anyway. And I just kind of built on that reputation and made friends with my instructors as compared to my fellow students. But those relationships are something that I've held on to forever now to still talk to those instructors, you know, still have a personal relationship with them, still can call them for advice, critiques, a hard time.
And you said there was one instructor that came to mind immediately when we were talking about people who had an impact on you, and he still gives you feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris Payne, CF Payne, is his signature. He's done a ton of great work, plenty of Time magazine covers, and all this other stuff. But it's nice to have him kind of in your corner. He's running the Hartford MFA program, and he'll still kind of jab me when I need it. when I post on social media or something, he'll be one of the first ones to comment, like, hey, watch that crease or watch that wrinkle, which is great. I think you always need somebody like that. They kind of act as bumpers or blinders.
You had said he was one of many people who had an impact on you. Did you have people who supported you in moving into this career, or did you just have enough stubbornness that you did it in spite of what anybody else said?
Yeah, I think stubbornness goes into it for sure. I'm probably one of the most stubborn people. You could just ask my wife. But I think he saw that that stubbornness would lead to, you know, being successful. And he was the first one to kind of knock me down a peg or two in school, but also was the one that built you back up from being knocked down. And when I left school and moved to New York, he was the first person I called for, like, I'm in New York, man, what do I do? And he gave me my first contact, like big national contact at the New York Times, and started working for them.
When someone like him opens a door for you, there are certain ways you think about that. I almost, the word that came to mind for me as you talked about it was a responsibility.
Yeah, I think you have a responsibility not only to yourself to be successful if you choose something that's more difficult or a path less traveled. But for me, it was, I didn't want to let him down at all either. And so I did everything I could to not let him down, and I didn't continually call him for references. I figured that one was good enough, and I used that one to springboard into my own career and finding my own doors to open. Sometimes all you need is that cracked door, but you also have to be stubborn enough or hard-headed enough to go after it for yourself. Sometimes one sip out of the pond is enough. You can't just go back and back and back. I wonder if he sees the success as a medal on his chest in a way, like I hope he does, because without him, I wouldn't have the career that I've had.
When you see people kind of starting to find their way, What goes through your head in terms of do I help this person? Do I not?
Yeah. So I've helped a couple of people kind of get their footing, and it's up to them whether they succeed at that or not. One, or a couple probably, have made me extremely proud and gone on to do great things, and others just kind of fell flat and couldn't rise to the occasion. And that's kind of hard because you stick your neck out for them a little bit. And I don't know if necessarily it's a generational thing. I see it more as reaching down and helping a friend as compared to not. Like, why would you not help somebody if you can?
There is this idea that people who are not artists, me definitely being one of those, has, and that is that if your art is pure enough, if your talent is strong enough, that's really all you have to do, and we picture you in your studio just living a life of joy and creativity every day. A little bit of insight for people who have not lived in your shoes. What's it like being a professional illustrator, being a professional artist?
I think the misnomer always is that it's always creative and that it's easy. There's certain parts of what I do that's easy, and I get that. But the only reason that it's easy is because I have 20 plus years of experience doing it, that it comes a little bit easier to me. The typical day for me is not a 9-to-5 at all. It's usually like a 8-to-midnight type of day where you work all day. Nighttime is very peaceful, quiet time for me to work. My light's kind of always on. Everybody's like, well, you're an artist. You kind of just do everything, you know, when you get inspired. And nothing is further from the truth for me. Inspiration is not something that strikes you like lightning, especially with what I do. It's kind of like on demand. Like, I have to be able to concept something or get an idea across in a single image, and that's not something that you wait on. Whoever's paying you, they're not going to wait for, you know, the creative bug to bite. They need something now.
I'm not feeling the inspiration. Or
yeah, that's never worked. I don't know why.
In terms of working with people, the analogy that you drew in my mind was like it being a new job every time you have a project. They're hiring a new employee and you're hiring a new boss
mm-hmm.
every time you do a project.
Yeah, that's kind of the fun of it. But it's also, it can be very difficult too, because you're learning different personality traits all the time. And so if I get to work with a client repeatedly, it's much more easy because then they know the mode of work. It's kind of like showing up to your first day at a job and how uncomfortable you are. Like, you have to prove yourself. And so every project I do with a new client is like the first day of work. And so you're getting, you know, for somebody like you, you're hired off of a resume or the word of other people. They're hiring me off of my work. And so the visual portfolio that I have. And so I have to stand up and back that portfolio up every time. But the more that I work with somebody, the easier it becomes, because then they trust you a little bit more. And I think the further out you get from the first day at a new job, the more comfortable you become. I think the hardest part is, for anybody, creative or not, is still proving yourself and doing the best thing that you can do a year out as compared to 2 days. Same thing with a relationship or anything like that. There's that heavy punch to prove yourself and all that stuff in the beginning. And it's, you know, the further away you get from that, the more comfortable you become, but you still have to prove yourself and make yourself passionate.
We talked about a phrase that someone had given me one time. It was the idea of honing your craft. Because this is a podcast, not a video, people can't see what your studio is like. But over your left shoulder, there's what looks to someone like me to be an authentic Rockwell. And you said it's not. And there's a story behind why that exists.
So every year I take on a dead artist to do a copycat kind of assignment to myself. It started in college when we were given copycat assignments. I always kind of gravitated to them because, one, kind of like tracing in a way, it can hone your skill. But the living artists I can call and ask them questions. The dead ones I can't. And so I learn about them through their brushstrokes and how they worked and why they worked a certain size. And so, yeah, every year I take on a different dead illustrator to kind of pick their brain.
Which to me creates a picture of you sitting with a piece of their art and you're just trying to copy it as best you can.
Mm.
But there's a lot more that goes into it.
Yeah, you gotta know size, medium, what was going on in the world, how they composed the image, you know, their contemporaries, who they were looking at, who they were learning from. You can see influences based on brushstrokes. So you do a Rockwell study and you look at how he put down flesh tones and you go, man, Rembrandt was his favorite. You know, there's no question. But fabric, how they painted fabric, how they painted textures, how leather looks different than jeans. And you have to kind of jump into that world a little bit. And there's something beautiful about that golden age. And everybody always thinks the world was better then. But in 50 years, they're always going to think that our time was better than theirs. And so that's kind of my way of kind of learning that culture and finding out who they were and what duress they were working under.
It's more than just what's on the canvas or more than what's in the book that you see. The idea that you're trying to walk in their moccasins, live in their skin a little bit, because that's a definite influence on what they created.
Without a question. You know, you never know what somebody's life is like until you get in there, mix it up a little bit. Go back to Rockwell a little bit. His influences and the magazines that he was working for and the money that he was working for, he was well paid during his time, for sure. But it's also this crazy pressure because there wasn't as many magazines out there. And so for him to do something for American Magazine or the Saturday Evening Post, that's stressful. Like, don't screw up. Yeah, it's fun.
looks awfully easy when we just look at a piece and we see that, you know, that's what's involved.
Yeah.
The other thing it makes me think of is how much more there is to not only your job, but lots of other jobs. We see an artist and we see the art. We think of an accountant. We think of filing taxes. All of the other aspects that go into being an artist. You mentioned working with the client. You've got relationships that you have to maintain with agent and with, you know, the various people you're working with on the business side. There's a PR aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were drawing comparisons to movie stars.
Oh, yeah.
How do you think about all those other aspects of your profession other than the art itself?
It's part of what you do. I think I drew a comparison between a lawyer and what I do. Like, for instance, I'm working on a children's book right now, and it's due May 1st, so 18 paintings are due May 1st. That would be, in lawyer terms, that would be the trial, right? You do everything in preparation, and once you present all your evidence and all that stuff, trial goes on, jury makes a decision, all that stuff. The lawyer gets to stop after final argument and breathe, and then all of a sudden, 2 months later, they have, you know, like a sentencing hearing. And so that would be me reviewing all the layouts and making sure the color's right when it goes to the printer and make sure that everything is printing correctly and that I didn't screw anything up if I have to redo something. And then once that's out of their hands, then it goes to printing. Once the printing's done and the books are actually in your hands, then you have to go to the bookstores and sign the books and do a lot of the PR stuff. This community wants to see this, and you go to schools and you talk and you do all this other stuff. And that's, you know, the same thing as like a lawyer. Then you go to appeals, you know, try to do it all over again.
So much more to it than just doing the art itself.
Yeah, but that's part of the fun too. That's kind of what brings you back. And you try to perfect it. I don't think there's anything that's perfect out there. But, you know, you kind of try to get closer and closer with every project that you have. Try to change it a little bit, still allow your style to shine through in whatever you do. And hopefully you pick up an audience and that audience digs what you do.
As one of the people who's in your audience, thanks for doing this.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Of course.
And not only the art, but also I know you're a really active and engaged part of the community. It's really neat that you choose to do it here. You do the work that you do, but you're also a big part of the community. Thanks for doing all that, too.
Yeah, of course. It's a great community to be involved in. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening here. As isolated as we are, it's something to be proud of.